The six types of working genius, which is all about putting people in the right seats inside of a work group. And a lot of these apartment deals, you have a team of people. So you want to make sure that you have the right people doing the right jobs. Even if somebody's good at something, doesn't mean it's good for them to be doing that job all the time.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Welcome everybody to Deal Lab. This is another edition of Dissecting Deals. We're going to take a look at a deal and then we're going to ask a bunch of questions. We're going to dissect that deal. We're going to figure out how that deal was done. So with me is Todd. Todd, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
I am originally from Kansas City. Todd Schoengert. I've been a broker agent for a long time, I guess, whatever, 25 years, something, I don't know. And I've always been investment interested since age 14 because my grandpa was a successful businessman, sent my dad a book on investing and a whole laid out strategy on investing in residential stuff close to your house by Robert Allen. I think it was called No Money Down or something. And I don't know if my dad ever read it, but I read it. And so since age 14 on, investing in real estate always made sense to me. And then I discovered you, Dave, somewhere, some investment class or something. I don't know. That's probably 20 years ago or something.
Wow.
And dove into, had some friends, Brian and Rebecca, who were locally doing well. And I was a little weekend. It was so inexpensive. It was no brainer. It was like $50 or so. I don't remember. It's like 3 years ago, weekend virtual training. And they featured Rebecca on there. I'm like, hey, I'm in Phoenix. I need her number. I called Rebecca. Brian and Rebecca showed up and I said, hey, man, are you getting good value out of the mentoring? And they're like, yeah, we are. And so I signed up right away. And that was maybe 2.5 years ago, I got into the mentoring. My parents both died in that first year. Oh, so wow. I had a lot of personal distractions, but so I think it's been like 2.5 years now or something. And the mentoring part of it.
Yeah.
Your home study courses, that other stuff over the years, you know, I have that stuff.
All that good stuff.
You betcha.
All right. So the deal we're going to talk about today is the 30-unit deal you did in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Number one, why Baton Rouge?
Number one is investing for a long time. I'm very partner driven. It has to be a market I like. The numbers have to work, have to have the right partners. And then I'm open to a lot of different types of real estate investments. So this one, let's see, my mom had passed unexpectedly. I got some notes here on April 7th of 21. Fast forward to, and Don Goff was my coach at the time. I don't know if we want to talk about any specific people, but I was at your ultimate partnering event in Dallas in first week of October in 21, walked out of a session. Brian was out there. He said, hey man, you got to jump in this Louisiana deal with me. I'm like, really? Tell me more about it. That's how I got into my first deal.
Brian who?
Brian Ayers. Brian and Rebecca, they said, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I just said, cool. And so we flew down there and took some months to get it. And it was, is a hairy deal, but all four of us in the deal, they're two local boys in Baton Rouge. And then Brian and I in Phoenix. We're all grinders. We've all got experience. We weren't afraid of something that was ugly. The two guys, Nathan and Brad in Louisiana, had crushed it. Brian had known them and gotten developed a relationship with Nathan and gotten to know Brad. And they crushed it on a 32 unit, which was probably like a D when they took it over. But our expectations going in is that Brian and I could each put like $50,000 in and literally get net like $3,000 cash flow a month from it. Because that 32 unit, they were just crushing it. It was cash flowing like crazy. So then we got into this 30 unit and it turned out a little different, but it's still very glad we did it.
You went to Ultimate Partnering and you partnered on a deal.
Bang.
How sweet is that? I'm just going to plug it. www.ultimatepartnering.com. This year it's in San Diego. So that's how you found the deals. How did he end up actually partnering with two local guys?
I can't remember exactly how Brian met, if it was the Bigger Pockets connection or something. You know, we're all educating and trying to learn as much as we can. And so he connected with Nathan somehow. Either he needed someone to check on a property in New Orleans. And Nathan said, yeah, I'll do it. Young hustler. I think that's how they first met. And so they had been in contact for over a year before he invited me into this deal.
All right. What was the offer price?
We started at 1.8.
And what was the listing price? And then what was your first offer?
I don't know if there was any listing price. It was bad operator, mismanaged. Don't know. They might have just approached him. But I know that when I was brought in, we were at like 1.8. So it was a 20 in one location between LSU and downtown. And that's what the guys were really excited about. They wanted that 20 unit. And that one actually ended up, it's still the biggest pain in the ass part of it. But that's how it goes. And then we had a 6 and a 4 off by their closer to their 32 unit. And that's what I love about commercial real estate. You can combine all kind of, there's so much more flexibility in it to combine things.
Well, that's an interesting concept. Explain to everybody the master lease option, and also why exactly did you choose that type of entry strategy?
He had pretty much run it into the ground. He'd hurt his reputation in town. He had to get stabilized. I was like, fine, we'll give you no money down, and we're going to take over this property with a master lease, and this is your new price. We kind of put him in the penalty box because his own bank, everybody, of course, told us no until it was stabilized.
Could you just text him and I glanced at it? What is the occupancy?
Did you say? Oh, at the time we were, it was 70, maybe 70%. But at one point, we, and this is why it's not a, this was not a deal for beginners. At one point in the 20 unit, 19 of the 20 people moved out almost at the same time. So
what happened?
The easiest way to describe it is if you walk into a house or an apartment and like something abandoned and you open the door and turn on the lights and all the bugs scatter. That's so we kind of, we put the light on the property, and then those that like to operate in the shadows scattered.
So you had drug dealers in the property?
Well, yeah, the boys said they saw some pretty heavy weapons at one point. And so, yeah, they...
What tactic did you use to turn on the lights? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, I used to deal with these properties all the time when I first started out. Mm-hmm. You know, mentally, I didn't think worthy for anything higher than a C minus. So I was doing C minus, B plus, B properties. Making a ton of money, but it was like the worst areas. And I was always taking over drug houses. I learned to tell people that there's two things that I can do. Actually, three tactics. The first one was I would send over a letter over to the building to all the tenants that basically said, dear tenant, I've complied with the request from the state police dog training unit to use our property as a training ground for the drug sniffing dogs. Don't be alarmed when you see these dogs on the property, blah, 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 right? Usually gets rid of all the drug dealers.
Yeah.
It works really good. Second one I would use sometimes is if I haven't talked to a tenant, I would say, hey, look, I understand there's things going on this property that shouldn't. Just between you and I, the state police has cameras set up on the building across the hall, so don't be alarmed. Boom, they blow. Neither one of those work. I actually contact the state. I used to bet like 20 years ago. I used to contact the state police, and then they used to set up the raid, you know, just raid the property and then get rid of everybody.
So. Yeah, and I know Brian had mentioned at one point, and I think maybe the guys did it. You know, getting some donuts, getting some food, getting something, and just saying to the police, hey, come on over. We got food for you. Just stop by and, you know, say hello so that people could see that, oh, the police are coming by. But this lovely African family that I think worked at the university, I think they're still there, the only ones that stayed.
Yeah. Here's another interesting story. So when there was a sixth family that I used the cameras across the street, there was, and one of the things that I was concerned about was there was an elderly couple on the top floor. So it's 1, 2, 3 on top of each other across the hall. So we got 2, 2, and 2. And they were selling crack on the first floor. They were selling heroin on the second floor, you know, weed on the first, on the other side, cocaine, the whole drug house, except for this poor little old lady and her husband. When I was up there, I said, ma'am, I says, I swear I will have this place cleaned in 30 days. If you just bear with me. I didn't know how long they'd been going through this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I did that tactic and boom, everybody was out except for one, and it wasn't the top right, it was the top left, a single mom. Usually back then in a drug house, it was usually a front for somebody else, you know what I mean? So,
right.
I made that assumption, but it was wrong. In that case, I was wrong in both parts because the older couple moved out as well, and what I found out from the lady next door, the single mom, is that they were the ringleaders of the whole thing. So it was really interesting.
So it's funny that the guys, they were really excited about the 20 unit. The 6 and the 4 were kind of like a throwaway to them, like, yeah, whatever. And the 6 and the 4 really saved our butts because they've been fine. And the 20 unit is the one that we've needed to do. It's pier and beam construction. And so crawl spaces underneath. It's just, we have it all the way full and everything done.
You just mentioned a term that some people might not know about, pier and beam. You want to explain that?
Basically, if you're in Baton Rouge, and I don't know how much of Louisiana, but that ground is wet. This is funny. If you put a basement in Louisiana, if you dig one, the basement won't like fill with water. It'll float because the ground has so much water in it. I'd never heard anything like that before. So they have piers in the ground and then there's crawl space underneath them so that because it's a better way to deal with the land in that area, I guess is the best way I could describe it.
Very common down there.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So was that 20 unit? Did they try to fill it prior to closing? Was that a requirement? Fill it back up?
we're still under the master lease. So we're the ones filling it up, and we are thinking that we're just going to sell it. But we've just been banking his payments like so. And then I didn't explain to everybody, when you do the master lease, we take over all the bills, everything. We take over the whole thing. So we're paying the mortgage. We're doing everything.
Over the master lease, was there a negative? Was there a deficit between the income coming in and the expenses going out?
No. We had to put more money in for more than the 50 for more repairs and other things. This didn't go like the 32 unit. When we had inflation skyrocket while we had it. And so we had more challenges with this one.
So Todd, my question is how many units in that 20 unit actually had tenants in it when you took over?
Tenants that we wanted to keep, one. Tenants that were in there, I think we had 6 or 7 were vacant.
So you took this over master lease, but I think my question of deficit was there, were you going out of pocket for this thing when you took it over because there were so few people? From what I understand, what are you telling me? There's only one person paying rent in that 20 unit?
Well, no, there were other people were paying, but they couldn't sustain it once we started making improvements. But we put $50,000, Brian and I both put $50,000 in up front. And then we had some more, I could pull up the spreadsheet, but we had more money coming that we had to put in. It's been, let me think of all the money that's in there off the top of my head. We are, maybe 200,000 in with everything, with all four of us.
So I get the master lease for 1.8, the 200,000 in?
Master lease for 1.45.
Oh, okay. So 1.45, 200, so yeah, 1.65. Where does this stand in terms of the amount of work that needs to be done, the left done, and in terms of the tenant base? Are you in the process of still changing over the tenant profile?
I think that still, because of the amount of people that are coming in and then we're still having to evict within like 6 months, we're still changing the profile over. But we have about, and this also happened, so this is another reason, not a rookie deal. The water department had turned on, we had a unit that was ready, almost all the way ready, but the water, somebody had moved into a unit next to it, and the water company had turned on the water to the wrong unit. So the tenant's saying, hey, where's my water? And then we realized that they turned it on to the wrong unit, and that unit that was almost ready got flooded, and we had to gut it. We had some other challenges along the way. But at some point, I'm sorry, I don't have the exact, because this is a complicated, kind of ugly deal, right? So we had, I'm not sure exactly where on the calendar we got to break even, but we were probably 6 months into taking it over, I would say.
Okay. 6 months after taking it over, you are, that's where your projected break even is, or where are you right now?
We've been in control of the property for over a year now, that 2 years. So we haven't put money in for a while. We've been able to, and the 6 and the 4, always had cash flow, like enough, very close to covering everything we needed. We needed money for repairs and for other things.
When you get this 20 unit up and running and the tenant profile the way you want it, what's your net positive?
Great question. We haven't had enough time with it fully. We haven't even had it fully occupied for any extended time for me to let you know that. And we're doing some rental incentives right now. Maybe we have to do a part two and I'll give you some better numbers in like 6 months.
Yeah, because I would be interested to know what your projected value of the property is.
We are going to, the broker is telling us that we're at about the 2.5, 2.3 to 2.5 for all of it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Our payoff is about $1 million, but we've got to pay the guy who ran it into the ground, like 400 and some. Our payoff of the loan is under $1 million. And then we've got to pay off the guy who ran it into the ground, his 450.
All right. So what's your plan with this property? How are you going to, once you get it up and running and the numbers right, sell it?
Yeah. We probably, the local guys would like to sell it. And I think, we can keep it, right? It's been stable for a while, but I think we're going to get it all the way full, ready, and sell it. And I just learned something today, too, that's cool, is that they sent me over an updated spreadsheet. And since I'm a visual guy, I love this. In Excel, they did boxes. And so a map of the 20 unit. And then on each little square where it has like the unit number, there's a little pink box in the corner, and I can click on that, and it has all the notes of the work that's being going on, that needs to be done, what needs to do to turn it. I didn't know you could do that with Excel. It's pretty cool. You'd have to see it, but it's a cool feature. Did that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
What was the biggest surprise on this property?
Biggest surprise was it was way off from our expectations. So you're going in saying, wow, they crushed it with a 32. This 30, let's do that again. It ended up being a lot more work and a lot more turnover. Their 32 unit was all in one location. And so this was just different. You know, we haven't pulled the cash flow out or anything yet. It's been much different than we thought it would be, but it's been fine. I mean, you know, I would, if we, all four of us, if we had the chance to do it again, we would definitely do it again, because we're going to get a good bump when we sell it. And it also, you know how it is when you get a deal going, it just, the momentum starts going. You have actual credibility, you're a closer, you're, all that stuff starts to snowball.
What about in terms of taking over the property? Were there any surprises structurally with the property?
Not too bad. It's just that area is, there's all kinds of flipping and stuff going on in the area, so we like that. It's just that eventually I think this one, a developer will come in and they'll tear it down and they'll do the land for something else on the 20 unit.
Why? Because is it right on the water?
No, it's just, it's in, right in between the LSU and downtown, so it's a good location. It's just an older property and it's fine. It's just the land is wet. The things still sit. It's just, you know, it just is what it is. And it's also, you know, one thing I want to say on your podcast too, is you've got to go, when you're going into a market, you've got to know the culture you're going into. They call it the Big Easy down there. And the workers might want to go fishing just because it's Tuesday. It's not a, somebody I know who owns stuff down there. He says, Big Easy, it's the Big Lazy. I'm like, well, it's just a little more laid back. It's not the,
this podcast goes out around the world.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The next thing I was going to do is ask you if you want to give out your contact information. But after you made that statement, I'm not sure if you do.
I didn't say that. I'm just repeating what somebody said.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, that guy that's the Big Lazy. I'm like, well, yeah, they might want to go fishing just because it's Tuesday. But you just, so it might take a little longer to get your projects done. It's just part of the culture.
All right. I'm not even going to touch that. If you do want to give out your contact information, how would people get a hold of you before I ask you a couple of questions about books and movies?
Absolutely. They can call me at 480-228-1441. And that is my cell phone. Again, 480-228-1441. And Scottsdale, Arizona is where I live. We have a place we use in, that we have in San Diego too. But my son's still in high school, so I'm mostly in Arizona when I'm not flying to one of your events or doing something with property.
All right, awesome. And what's the best book you've read in the last 6 months?
Probably Asking It's Given is great. In our mastermind that I'm in with you, that's a great book. And then I have been reading I had read The Six Types of Working Genius, which is all about putting people in the right seats inside of a work group. And a lot of these apartment deals, you have a team of people, so you want to make sure that you have the right people doing the right jobs. Even if somebody's good at something, doesn't mean it's good for them to be doing that job all the time.
Excellent. And what about the most inspirational movie that you've ever watched?
Oh, inspirational movie. Wow. I love Mr. Holland's Opus because I'm a music guy like you. I haven't watched it in forever. Gosh, that's a really good question because I love movies. Most inspirational. I mean, of course, Rocky's inspirational, because I know the backstory too of that. Yeah, so I think that I would say, you know, and something that was cool too is The Offer is about the making of The Godfather, and it's a show, I think it's on Paramount now. It's really talk about the tenacity and hanging in there, and nothing is like, social media is not real, right? There's 9% grinding. I mean, like 90% grinding, and then 10% is like the, hey, we closed something. So it's interesting to hear the behind the scenes and all the challenges of making The Godfather.
One final question. Before I ask that final question, for those of you that are active investors and or passive investors, if you're active and you're looking for additional education, you can go to rementor.com. And if you just want to be passive for now, you can go to passivefornow.com and see what types of deals that we're doing. There's no commitment involved, but if you're interested in investing, you can do that as well. Todd, I have one final question. It's this. Do fish get thirsty?
I guess it depends on how much they work out. But if they hit the gym hard, then they get thirsty.
Depends if they're going upstream or not.
Right.
Is that it?
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
All right, so this has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. We will see you on the next episode.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.